This is Oklahoma Perspective. In the wake of flooding and tornadoes, dozens of government agencies have sprung into action, and that includes the Tulsa County Clerk's Office. Recently, KRMG's Russell Mills talked to Michael Willis, the Tulsa County Clerk, about their responses to the tornadoes and flooding in the area.
You know, what happens next? What's the recovery effort look like? How did things go? Did we any lessons learned? So you're going to say something before I started recording, and just go ahead with that
right thought.
Well, yeah, I was just going to give you some of the background of how my office, the county clerk's office, is related to a situation like this.
That'd be great.
From the customer perspective, you know, there are several people that have obviously thousands of people have been impacted by this flood and the storms that have wrapped around it and all those sort of things. And so when they're looking to get assistance, aid, those sorts of things, sometimes they may need copies of their land records to prove ownership of properties or homes. And my office is ready and able to assist people to get those documents. We're going to do that for free. We can't always do that, but we will be providing those for free via email, or if they need to be mailed hard copy, we can do that as well. It's a little slower that way, but so from the customer perspective, we want to be able to serve the public as well as we can, providing them with documents and records that could help assist them with getting aid or relief, and those sorts of things. From the county operations perspective, my office handles most all of the county finances, and so our checkbook has been we've been writing checks pretty fast, paying for lots of disaster related needs. So we're working very hard on that. In fact, right now I'm about to go into a meeting to talk to some folks about you know, federal government assistance and what all we need to document to be eligible to receive assistance from FEMA and other federal aid. So we've been very busy with those sorts of things, with the county's financial operations as it relates to responding to the flood and this crisis, and also wanting to help respond via providing documents and records for our citizens who have been impacted.
How are employees holding out? I'm sure that at least some of them have been affected by storms and or flooding. And
they have.
Long
we've
hours.
Got, well, we've had several of my employees who directly have been impacted because they live in areas that are protected by the levee. We have one that lives at Candlestick Beach over on the far western end of Tulsa County, which is literally right off the dam, which I'm sure you've been there before. So those folks have been impacted. Some of my folks have had to help family members, you know, leave some of their possessions behind as they evacuate their properties. And then I even have an employee who lives in Sepulpa who was directly affected by the tornado. So several folks, actually I've got a couple folks have been impacted that way and have been without power for a while. And all the while they have done a remarkable job of coming into the office and doing what they need to do to serve the public. So certainly proud of my team there. But yeah, I mean, a couple of my folks and I will be attending a meeting tonight where we're trying to help, you know, provide some stuff to folks that have been impacted. And we've been putting in a few extra hours and we'll continue to do that, do whatever we can to try to help folks that have been affected.
There are several buildings and facilities on the west side of the county, and I'm thinking of, you know, youth services and or the you know, youth court system, the juvenile court system, the county pharmacy, which I confess did not even really know existed. Fantastic program over there. That's what I was talking with Linda Johnston about. There's a shelter over there that always has a few dozen people in it. Those people had to be moved. So I mean, the county has had to deal, just like the city, just like the state, with a red ball disaster. And I don't think we took any damage over there, but those facilities are still closed as a precaution. Is there any way to anticipate when they'll be able to reopen, or do you know?
Well, I think when the water is down to, I think when the release gets to close to 150,000 cubic feet per second, that will relieve most of our stress in terms of having people working and utilizing those facilities. So as the water recedes, we should be able to reopen those in hopefully a fairly short time frame. But, you know, our crews from our building operations department to our information technology, certainly to the sheriff's office, who's been incredible. Sheriff Regalado and his team have done a great job of helping, you know, with the logistics in terms of helping get the youth, the kids that were in our detention center out to housing in another place. And certainly from the social services perspective, moving folks from our family shelter into, I believe many of them ended up going into one of the Salvation Army facilities. The pharmacy, you know, all that stuff. We have a parks administrative office. We have a central garage that has been on standby to be able to remove any of our county vehicles that might still be there within about 30 minutes notice if we had some sort of major incident close to them on the levee system. So, I mean, everyone has done really yeoman's work in terms of being ready and trying to facilitate what we would need to relocate assets and get people out of areas that would be impacted.
Yeah, I spoke with Gwen Freeman today, the election board secretary, and she said the parks people are basically taking up residence there temporarily so they've got someplace to work because
Right. They've
got a big old mess to clean up. I'm thinking of Mohawk, just for example. That's
O'Brien.
And O'Brien.
O'Brien Park is our county park that has been really negatively impacted up on 66th Street North and Lewis. So yeah, Parks Department's been working overtime, and our Parks Department also has served as a alternative shelter for some of the folks at the boys' home. We have staged the National Guard out of Chandler Park with some of the really, really big sandbags that we have in case we had a levee breach or anything like that. So, yeah, we've played a pretty significant role in the response to the community-wide issue here. And our crews, and I can't say enough about my colleagues that work for the county and the city and state and everyone else who've just come together and done a really terrific job protecting and serving the folks that we're here to serve.
So clearly plans were in place for something like this. I mean, we didn't just make all this up on the fly. But looking forward, have we learned lessons that might help us respond more efficiently or more quickly in the future?
Well, I think anytime you go through an exercise like this, and certainly this time it's a real life disaster, but whether it's this or whether it's just a drill where we're going through, you know, the moving through the motions of what something like this might look like, certainly we pick up things here and there. I know that, you know, it sounds like a small thing, but I could have done a better job in my office of setting up, you know, some project codes to track the expenses that we're incurring for some of the response to this. We're going to certainly track everything, but it would have been easier if we had kind of set up a project code in our financial management software system to be able to do a lot of that for us instead of doing it in a bit of a manual way, which is what we're gonna need to do. And we have all that set up, and that's kind of minutia, but little things like that come up that where certainly we know we can improve on what we're doing and what we're providing to citizens. But certainly, I mean, no one, and I wouldn't take anything away from our officials like, you know, Commissioner Keith and Sheriff Regalado, Mayor Bynum, and down to Jinx with their leadership, and Bixby and Broken Arrow, all the folks that have been impacted. You know, everyone has, there's been very little guarding of the fiefdom, and no one has been stuck inside their silo, which is really great when you're dealing with lots of different government entities, and everyone has been willing to help everyone else. And you can really see that we're all, you know, all in this together, and everyone has treated it that way.
Michael Willis, Tulsa County Clerk. For those who have been directly affected by flooding, cleanup will be the first thing on their minds after the floodwaters recede. Recently, KRMG's Russell Mills talked to Andrew Moore, owner of Reset Restoration, about what it takes to get a house back to normal.
I know that you guys handle all kinds of, you know, smoke damage, fire damage, flooding damage, storm damage. Of all the things that you do, I'm guessing flood damage might be some of the hardest work that you actually do. Am I off base?
No, absolutely it is. It's extremely labor intensive. The amount of care that we have to take, not only with our crew, but the actual dwelling that we're working in, is an extremely fragile situation. One, because obviously we're dealing with a major catastrophe with the homeowner or the insured and their property, because one, they've been displaced now for however long it is until the water recedes. And two, they come home and, you know, what used to be a home is now covered in mud and filth. So we get into these situations where, you know, it's extremely fragile situation for the homeowner, but also for our guys, because the stuff that we deal with is not your typical water. It's not a pipe break inside of a wall that, you know, caused some water to run out onto your floors or anything like that. Everything that this water touches that it comes across, it carries it with it. So everything from the birds that are swimming in the down below the dam right now to your neighbor's dog that just used the restroom. I mean, all that stuff is inside that water. So we consider it a category three. There's three categories of water, category one, two, and three, category three being the worst. And so when we deal with that, it's there's a lot of protocol that has to go in just to ensure the safety of everybody involved, and then to also meet the requirements to ensure that the dwelling now has a clean bill of health when we're done.
So just off the top of my head, what the health department's been talking about is hepatitis A, I think it is, and tetanus. I mean, anybody who even comes in contact with floodwater, they say you need to go get, you know, shots for tetanus and hepatitis. So I imagine that you guys are really careful to suit up and to cover up as much as possible when you're working in that kind of environment.
Absolutely. We call it being suited and booted. And that basically means that we are protected from head to toe. We have a strict PPE protocol, PPE being obviously personal protective equipment. Everything from full face respirators with at least an N95 respirator cartridge on it, to a Tyvek suit, to we go as far as underneath our work gloves, we put nitrile latex exam gloves underneath our work gloves to ensure that our hands don't get wet, because if you've ever worn a work glove, you know they're not waterproof. We make sure that we wear rubber boots with hard soles on them so that if someone accidentally steps on a nail, it's not going through our foot. But yes, the PPE factor is extremely important when we deal with this, because there's just so many things in that water. Like you mentioned, everything from hepatitis to tetanus to E. coli, the amount of bacteria in that water is just, it's insane.
So let's talk a little bit about what happens to a home or a business that gets flooded, because this affects, obviously, you know, the carpeting all the way down to the foundation. It affects the drywall. It may even affect the actual structure itself, depending on how bad the flooding was and how long it was underwater. Can you kind of talk a little bit about what you guys generally find when you go into start mucking a place out?
Yeah, so initially when we go in, our biggest tool is obviously our eyeballs and our moisture meters. Our moisture meters tell us a lot about any hidden water. So you may come into a home and you may see a water line at 2 feet where that water kind of sat inside the house and it was, you know, stagnant there at 2 feet high. Well, you know, your drywall is like a sponge. So that water just keeps wicking inside of that drywall, and it could wick, you know, as high as to the top of the ceiling. So we take our moisture meters and we find out exactly where that water is, how much is there. And anytime we deal with this category three water, it's considered, it's gone. Anything that water touches has to be removed and disposed of. So if we have a water line at 2 feet, but we use our moisture meter and we see that the water's actually wicked up to 4 feet, the protocol is to take 2 feet beyond that moisture content. So essentially we'd be making chalk lines at about 6 feet in your house, and coming through and cutting out 6 feet of drywall all the way across any wet surface. As far as, you know, the structural side of it goes, you know, if we'd notice anything out of the ordinary, we'd want to get you in contact with a structural engineer that could come out and assess and, you know, make recommendations on what it would take to actually, you know, make your foundation secure, or if walls would move, things of that nature.
Which could happen, you know, depending on whether the water was flowing or whether it was fairly stagnant, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen the video of down in Crescent where the Cimarron River is basically, it's swallowed up a few houses. So it absolutely can happen.
So I just have to imagine that you guys are getting flooded with calls. I hate to use a bad pun, but that you're getting a lot of calls for help basically all over the area. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. It is... It's, you know, it is definitely a stressful time on all of our ends. We're all family men. We're spending a lot of time away from our families right now. But, this is the business that we signed up for, and we're here to help people get back to normal in times like this. I mean, we've worked in something that's comparable to this would be, in recent memory, would be Hurricane Harvey. We mobilized and went down to Houston for Hurricane Harvey, and it's essentially the same thing, a little bit different kind of weather pattern, but we're dealing with the exact same situation. The biggest portion of this is yet to come. It'll happen once the floodwaters start to recede. But we're starting to see an influx of calls up north in the Skytook and Sperry area where Bird Creek is finally kind of settled down. But anything along the Arkansas River, it's really yet to hit because the water's just still too high for anybody to get in and do anything.
And I noticed that when Ryan and you started this company, you guys decided that you kind of took a little bit of a different approach because you're coming at it sort of from a construction background. Kind of explain a little bit about how that changes your approach when you're doing this kind of work.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ryan himself was a home builder for several years in the area, and he knows the ins and outs of a home's construction from the ground up. He's been there. He's done that. I, on the other hand, have actually had the restoration background. I've started in restoration back when I got out of school and have somehow maintained my way through it, I guess I should say. But so when we put our collaborative heads together and you've got, you know, someone that's as well-versed in the overall building construction of a house, and then you've got somebody like myself who knows how to approach these situations with the water losses and to how to find that and properly dry things and obviously take the approach of what needs to come out of opposed to what can be saved. It really works well with the way that we've done things here, and we've been pretty fortunate to stand the test of time now, and luckily enough we're a referral-based business, so a lot of the stuff that we get in is just by word of mouth of people that have used us before and spread the word, and so we've been fortunate in that fact.
All right, so you mentioned that when you go in, you see a water line at 2 feet, and then you use your equipment to test and see that the water actually wicked up a couple more feet. You go a couple feet above that. I would imagine that has to do with preventing, you know, possible mold.
Absolutely, and it's just it's a safety net. It's not only necessarily the mold issue, but in this situation, it's with the floodwaters, it's just a safety net to ensure that we are getting everything out. We do not want to leave anything in there that when we turn a home back over to someone that they could possibly end up ill or something of that nature because we missed something. So we take every precaution just to ensure that we make sure we get it to when we hand it over, that we are confident that you're going to be safe going back into your home.
Andrew Moore of Reset Restoration. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective. For Cox Media Group, I'm Bert Williams.